Hey, I've got to compliment you, by the way, on being one of the most astute listeners ever listening to talk radio. I mean, when I have some time, I listen to a few shows out there, daytime shows, and let me tell you, you have a PhD in life compared to some of these other people I hear calling these programs, and I just want to congratulate you on that. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment with more open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go to Steve, first of all, in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Okay, not bad.
Glad to be back on with you. I got a quick question and a quick comment, if I may.
Sure.
The Amaro, I was wondering if you had ever heard of the Amaro.
The A-M-E-R-O, Amaro?
Yeah, A-M-E-R-O.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had some shows with Jerry Corsi about that.
And is this something you see being implemented if we were to have to switch currencies or we went bankrupt for some reason?
I think it's a possibility. I think before this economic collapse, the Amaro was going to be our way with Mexico, possibly Canada,
yeah,
of fighting the European Union and the euro.
Okay.
Now that this economic mess has collapsed and it seems like the euro has fallen from grace, I'm not so sure they're going to implement the Amaro yet. I think it was a stopgap to kind of protect the dollar. And right now the dollar seems to be getting a little stronger again.
Personally, I think with these, you know, the euro and the American dollar, it's all kind of smoke and mirrors type thing.
Probably is. Absolutely.
And the quick comment I had is I don't understand why the American people in general put so much confidence in a government that really can't even balance their own checkbook. It just doesn't make sense that you know, we pretty much let these crooks run this country, and it just seems like we're going to a collapse, and I'm just not that comfortable with that. I don't see how more is not being done about this.
When I was in Washington, D.C. last weekend,
yeah,
and saw the Federal Reserve in this huge edifice structure, this mm-hmm. building of marble, I mean, it's gorgeous from the outside, but I'm looking at this thing going, these people are controlling everything right now.
Yeah, it's scary.
it really was.
It seems like we're, you know, we're just heading into a very dark place, and it's, yeah, I think a lot of people are starting to wake up, which is a great thing, but it might be too late, you know. I think the wheels are already turning on that.
The wheels are turning. I don't know if it's totally too late yet, but hold on for one heck of a ride, Stephen.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Okay.
It's great talking to you, George, as always, and I'll keep listening to your show. I'd just like to say hi to Randy and Wolfie. I know they're listening. So
there you go.
You have a great night.
Okay, you too. It's like a roller coaster. Ever been in one? You hang on for your dear life, and you hope you don't fall out, and you just want it to finish, and that's what it feels like right about now. Just hold on, don't fall out, and hopefully that ride is going to stop, and then you can get out. Let's go to Sacramento, California. We've got John west of the Rockies. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How you doing?
All right.
Hi, I've been a listener since like 1992.
Oh, beautiful.
And anyways, I'd just like to make an appeal to the hardworking, taxpaying citizens of the world. If they're appalled, as I am, with the actions of BP Oil Company, find out where they sell their product and just don't patronize their stores. I think we will get their attention very quickly.
I think they have green signs that say BP on it.
And they got white and blue signs also out here in California.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah, and they charge you a 50-cent fee if you use your ATM card there. So you have to go across the street to the other guy and patronize somebody that puts something back in our economy. Anyways, that was all I had on that. Can I say something about Bigfoot?
Sure.
You had a guest a couple of years ago. He was going to go to El Dorado County and go up there and look for Bigfoot. I forget his name, but I was riding home from Nevada one night, and I was going around a corner, and I could have swore I saw Bigfoot, and it, like, disappeared. And a few weeks later, I heard his show and just the hair stood up on the back of my neck.
And then, of course, remember the one from the two fellows down south, the former police officer and I think a corrections officer who had a Bigfoot, they claim, and they kept him in a refrigerator. And it turned out to be some costume that a great costume maker had made. And we stumbled into that story. That was bizarre. Let's go next to our luck line. Jim is in Denver, Colorado. Feeling lucky, Jimmy? Go ahead.
Yes, this is Jim in Denver. Yes, I was traveling down I-25 going north to Denver City. I just got off of work from a warehouse, you know, a furniture warehouse, about 5 miles south of Denver. And I was traveling with my car going down the freeway. My steering wheel broke, and it kept on spinning around and around and around.
Oh, no.
I was in the third lane from the from getting off to the exit ramp, which I couldn't get to because the steering wheel broke and it kept on going around and around and around. My heart was in my throat. I was praying to heaven above that I could get over to the last lane to the right and get off the exit ramp or at least to the shoulder road to get off. Well, my car drifted to the right slowly. I had my blinker on all the way. And then I got to the last lane, this car, I just missed clipping them. And I by luck, I got off the ramp. There was a ramp right there. My car went off the ramp, off the on the off ramp, and I landed on the shoulder road, and I turned off the engine, and I cried.
My, that's not just luck, Jim. That's a miracle.
That's a miracle.
You had angels pushing that car.
I had no control of that car whatsoever.
That is amazing. You should have been all chopped up. You should have been smashed and everything.
I had no control of that car whatsoever. And they told me the reason why my car did that because the pin sheared off in the steering column under the hood.
Oh, my. And that, I've never heard of that happening before.
Me neither.
But it happened to you. All right.
My brother said I should have called the car company and tell them about the pin is sheared off.
Absolutely.
In the steering column.
Get a whole new car. But, man, were you, that was a miracle.
I sure was lucky.
All right. You got it. Good story. Let's go to Tony in Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome to the show, Tony. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Okay, Tony.
Good to speak with you. I guess those dialing fingers finally got through.
It works, doesn't it?
Hung up on once, but I made it back.
Super.
It was really important. I listened to you last night, and I've been trying to get through on this particular subject, especially with the gentleman that you had earlier. I really wanted to speak with him about it, but I know you probably know just as much. You know how you guys have those news links on your site?
Yes.
Every week? Well, I'm always looking at those. I'm sure everybody is. There's some really interesting stuff there. But one of the ones you listed was probably about 3 weeks ago. It was about a couple of kids. I don't know. They were probably 16 or 17. I can't remember if it listed an age. And they apparently went out to a park to park, you know, to make out or whatever they were going to do. And it was completely dark. And the girl was talking about it. She just glanced outside, and it looked like, you know, the moon sort of getting closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
And or a dark object covering up the moon, getting closer and closer. And this was one of you guys ran this. Apparently, what happened was a craft, some type of UFO, picked up the car, carried it a few hundred feet, and apparently these kids were getting sucked up against the ceiling, and the windshield was getting bubbled out like
right.
outward.
Right.
And are you familiar with? Do you know the story?
Yeah, and I don't know if that happened, but I am familiar with the story.
And then supposedly MUFON picked up the car. They said that the police officer, they called the police officer, which, you know, if you were teenagers, I don't think you'd do if you wrecked mom's car, because they're gonna figure it out. But nonetheless, they called the cop, and he couldn't, apparently, in the article, he couldn't find any damage on the outside, only on the undercarriage. So I would be really curious to know, you know, if you can find out if MUFON has that car and if that was a real story. Because,
okay.
I mean, if that's a real story, that's a lot of evidence.
That's worth checking into.
All right. Well, all right. I thank you for everything, George. Yeah. You have a great night.
The first thing I thought of when that happened was they damaged the car and came up with this incredible story to satisfy mom. But, hey, you know what? You never know. Mike's in Stockton, California. Mike, go ahead. You're up with us.
Hi, great show. Hey. First time caller.
Great, thanks.
Hey, listen, on the oil spill, man, we got to do something about that. And America should try to put all of their knowledge into fixing this thing. And one idea I had of how to contain it was send down an air column, put a ring around that pipe down there as big as necessary, and put high-pressure air. It'll contain the oil at least till it gets to the top, and then they can siphon it off. But the whales do it when they feed. Might as well use nature to fix it.
Yeah, and you know what? It just seems like we, as a country, we're letting BP try to figure out how to stop this. We should have every engineer available to try to stop this.
That's exactly right, because all they want to do is cover their rear.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, they got to be able to put some kind of vortex of air, something to contain that into a perimeter, and then they can deal with it. You can't deal with it once it hits the surface and gets into the current.
I would love us to get these top engineers on this one. Thanks, Mike. Let's go to Lynn in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies, where it is 4:20 in the morning. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about your friend that you mentioned from time to time who's paralyzed.
He still is. A little motion, not a lot. He's still bedridden. I mean, they get him up, and they're putting him through therapy. But, I mean, you talk about a disaster.
It is a disaster. And I know that you say they have no money for aftercare. And I was wondering if the family could get through their attorney some kind of a fund. I know the Coast to Coast family. I mean, if you could send a dollar, we could send 10 bucks or 50 bucks. I think we could get the man set up for some aftercare. And if they would do that, if he would mention it on the air, then we could send some funds his way.
Well, you know, thank you for that. I have purposely not done that.
Because, I know you have. I knew that. I knew you wouldn't ask.
I can't do it.
Heartbreaking when, you know, you hear about the poor guy.
You know, there are so many other people out there who have similar problems, and it's just not fair for me to do that to them.
I know, but you know how they say we all have to help each other out. Where do you start then, George? Where do you start helping your neighbor or your guy? You know what I mean? All we have is each other because the government doesn't care.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So far, the company he works for, he's still on the disability/payroll.
Okay.
But you know what? That's getting to a point, too, where how long do you hold a guy on? You know, especially in this economic world.
Yeah.
But thanks for thinking.
All right, well, we'll pray for him then.
Okay, that's
good. All right,
thanks. Absolutely. We go next to Las Vegas, New Mexico. Mike's on the line. Mike, go ahead.
Hello, George. I was wondering, you know, upon everything that we hear these days, you know, on the news and talk radio and so on, do you think this country will ever, or, you know, our world, or the country anyway, United States, are things ever, in your opinion, will things ever improve, or is it ever going to get better? Are we ever going to have a government that?
Yeah, I think we will. I think despite everything that's going on and the stupid mistakes that have been made by a lot of politicians, I think eventually we are going to get better, not only as a nation, but as a world by necessity. But with this caveat, it is going to be one treacherous road once we get to the other end. I mean, we are going to be in for some bumps, calamities, you name it. We're going to be faced with it as people, and it's going to depend on how strong we are and how we pull ourselves out of it because, you know, it's going to be tough, and I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. My personal feeling is that we are going to have bumps in the road, and you will think they are the biggest potholes you've ever hit, and but eventually, I think we're going to pull out of it. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Adam is on the luck line. Go ahead, Adam. A couple minutes for you.
Okay, let me run through this real quick.
Sure.
When I was around 16 or 17, we were down here in Texas during the spring. It started to warm up, and some buddies of mine decided to they told me about a pond that we were going to go out to and go swimming, even though I told them I couldn't swim. And we went out, and like young kids at that age, we drank a couple beers while we went out there, and I got in the water, and they told me there was a little island in the middle of the pond, and I got in the water a little bit, and they said, well, go ahead and go out there. It's only so deep, you know, you can keep your head up just by walking. You can you'd be able to stay above the water. Well, I went out there and I watched the guys swim for a little while, and on the way back out, we were getting ready to leave. I started walking back to where the car was parked, and I ran to a spot where it wasn't high enough where I could keep my head up. And I didn't want to holler at first. I didn't want to panic, but I went down a couple times, and I pushed off. And finally, George, I just said, this is it. I'm not going to make it. So finally, I started hollering for help. And I really thought that it was over with. This may have been a near-death experience in a way, because I really just in my mind thought it was over with. And the lucky part is, it just so happened, George, somebody grabbed me and took me. And later on, he told me that I was fighting him and I was panicking. He almost had to knock me out. Happened to be the only one there that was a certified lifeguard.
Oh, what a horrible feeling, Adam, isn't it?
It was terrible. But I tell you what, it did change my life. And unfortunately, I did some more risky behaviors. I've changed a lot now. I got a family. I'm 50 years old now, and I'm really pretty level-headed now. But it has changed me in a way that I appreciate everything in life now, especially my children and things like that. And everyone tells me that I seem to have an ability that when I get into bad situations, I have a way to stay calm. And when everybody else is like panicking, I can, I'll go more into a mode or like a problem solving mode where I can try to figure out the best way to get out of the situation. And I really think it's because I was there. I was at the point where, hey, I really accepted it. This is over with. This is the end of my life right here. And it just so happened. I mean, there could have been another second left where he had to, where he grabbed me and took me ashore.
You know what? And what would have happened had you got pulled out of the water and then you look for the guy who saved you and he's not there. Nobody's there.
That would have been even more of a miracle.
You got it. Thanks, Adam. Have a good weekend.
All right. You too.
I remember when I must have been 8 or 9 years old, I was in a lake. My uncle was with me, and we were out there in the water walking back into shore, and he was like a step ahead of me, and I must have walked into a hole that was underwater. This thing must have been 3 feet deep, and I was probably about 2'11" at the time. I mean, I went right down into this thing. It was the scariest thing. And I somehow got out of it and pulled my way out. And my uncle didn't even notice I was gone. He was still walking. But that was frightening. Think about falling into a hole that's underwater. And thank God it had a bottom to it. Because if it didn't, I would have kept going down, down, and down. Hey, by the way, don't forget, I'll be back in Los Angeles for Monday's show. After having a great spring, enjoyed my kids, saw my grandson christened, and just had a great time. Went to a couple concerts that my daughter's children, two little girls, play the violin. They call it Suzuki, and it's a good trip here in St. Louis, friends and family. And then it's back to Los Angeles for some more work as well. And when we come back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM, Mark Zachary and Ann Serling will join us to talk about the Twilight Zone and about the late Rod Serling and what an incredible man he was. Stand by. I'll be right back. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I got to tell you, one of my favorite television shows of all time, always, the Twilight Zone. The work of Rod Serling and his writers and staff, absolutely riveting. And, of course, Mark Zachary, an expert with his Twilight Zone companion, and Ann Serling, just great stuff. You'll hear it in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Rodman Edward Serling, Rod Serling, was an American screenwriter, best known for his live television dramas of the 50s and his science fiction anthology television series, of course, The Twilight Zone. I had a chance to speak with the author of the best-selling The Twilight Zone companion, Mark Zachary. And joining us was Ann Serling, Rod's daughter. We talked about her father and the Twilight Zone series. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Very well, George. Glad to be here.
Good. My pleasure. Ann Serling has a Bachelor of Arts degree in elementary education from Elmira College and recently adapted two Twilight Zones, The Changing of the Guard and One for the Angels, into two short stories. Currently at work on a memoir about her father, the late, great Rod Serling. Hey, Ann, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming aboard. Mark, tell us a little bit about the relationship here with Anne in Twilight Zone.
Well, I started writing the Twilight Zone Companion when I was right out of college. And fortunately, Anne's mother, Carol Serling, was kind enough to give me access to all of Rod's material. So I was actually haunting that house and climbing up into the attic and going through the scrapbook. So Anne, you must have wondered who this young madman was wandering around the house at that time. So
I'm very impressed with what you did, Mark.
Well, thank you. But it was so much fun to go through all that material. It was just such a wonderful wealth of phenomenal, brilliant work by Rod.
What was it like with your dad thinking of all these Twilight Zone episodes, Anne?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
What was it like with your dad thinking about all these Twilight Zone episodes?
Well, actually, I didn't know what my father did for a living until I was about 8 years old, and I only knew then because someone on the playground asked me if I was something out of the Twilight Zone and asked me where he got his ideas. Was he hanging from the ceiling? And I knew he was a writer, but I didn't know specifically until that point what actually he was writing, and I went home and asked him.
Well, let me tell you, he has given us some of the greatest moments. Just last night, we had William Shatner on, who was in two Twilight Zone episodes. Classics, of course, Nick of Time and The Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Mm-hmm.
And your father was just so creative when it came to this. And he was able to get in very strong, important messages. You know, he just kind of leaked them into the program. They weren't obvious, but they were there. And just a wonderful individual and the kind of mind that he had. So genetically, do you have that? Do you have that same thought?
Well, I don't know that I have that. I'm sure I pale against that. But he was an extraordinary father and person.
Hey, Mark, you know, we've talked about the various Twilight Zone episodes when you've been on before, and of course you've done a lot of study, and you even found some old scripts of Rod's up in the attic there at his house. This generation is ready for another Twilight Zone, I think, but we've only got one Rod Serling.
That's right, and so I think that if when you have a new Twilight, well, you know, the fascinating thing, George, is actually that I went to a screening tonight of Battlestar Galactica, a new episode of it, and the people who run Galactica, the people who run Lost, you know, all these great shows that are changing television now, those are people who are inspired by Rod. Babylon 5 was another one, and all of us are in Rod's shadow. All of us who are aspiring to create the great television of today and tomorrow, and so Rod was really the first and the great showrunner of all time, and Twilight Zone has lasted because it was a work of brilliance that stood the test of time.
And tell me about the work you're doing now on your father. When will it be out?
I'm just in the process of writing it now, so I don't have the answer when it will be out. Hopefully soon. I'll be done with the draft and get it moving.
Mark, did you tell her how difficult it is to write these things?
Well, you know, I think that when you're writing something from love and writing something that's really from your heart, that helps a lot. And certainly, this is a book I'll very much want to read. And I'm really glad, Anne, that you're taking this on and writing about Rod.
156 original episodes, Mark, right?
That's right. And 92 of them Rod wrote himself. So that's an astonishing output over 5 years. And that's just an amazing creative font of just they're so varied. When you look at the Twilight Zone from story to story to story, it's not like a regular TV series where each week it's the same characters. Every time out of the gate, they had to create new characters, new situations.
And you said he wrote most of them in his head.
Yes. Well, he would, and perhaps Anne can talk about this. The way Rod would sit by the pool and dictate scripts at home. That was just quite an amazing way to write.
Anne, of the episodes, do you have a favorite?
Walking Distance, of course, and A Stop at Willoughby, Death's Head Revisited. One that we watched every Christmas was Night of the Meek.
Billy Mumy is a fan of the show, and we've had him on several times, and he was just great when he played that little kid. And I'll always remember when he came in, he's an adult now, but you picture him as that little freckle-faced redheaded kid. And he walks in, and I'm going, "Whoa, that's you!" But he did that line. You're a bad, bad man, and he's just a classic. Mark, how about you? What's your favorite?
Oh, well, the ones that Ann mentioned, of course, are terrific, and It's a Good Life, of course. And there's some of the hour ones that aren't as well known. Death Ship is a great episode. On Thursday, we leave for home with James Whitmore, just phenomenal. And then there's one Charles Beaumont wrote called Miniature that stars Robert Duvall, and it actually wasn't even in the syndication package for many years, and it's just a very heartwarming episode. So those are some of the ones that I really like, too.
Okay, we're going to take phone calls. Let's go west of the Rockies. David in Van Nuys, California. Hey, David.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
I'm beside myself even speaking to you.
Good.
I just don't want to mention to Ann and to you, because you know it's a given. These are things, the things that Rod came up with, he was a special individual, as you are, and Ann and myself, anybody that has a link to what nature has to give us. When you reach out for something, it's going to rush away from you. When you relax and let it come to you, it's a natural. And that's what Rod was. One was a vector to be able to draw
yeah.
the most important thing to life, what we are. And he was able to show us through his writings everything that we are today.
I think that's very true.
It is. It
seems that he had the ability, too, to draw in some great writers, Mark Zuckery.
Yes, he did. And he was very gracious about that. George Clayton Johnson, Charles Beaumont, Earl Hamner, Richard Matheson. When he won the second Emmy for Twilight Zone, he held it up on the camera during the telecast, and he addressed the other writers by name and said, "Come over to my house and we'll carve it up like a turkey, the Emmy." And it was a writer's show, and he had a really real appreciation of writers. One thing I should mention, George, is that that Rod is actually being inducted into the Science Fiction Hall of Fame next Saturday up in Seattle, and Ann and I are going to be up there for that ceremony. So anyone who wants to come, if they're in Seattle, June 21st, 8 p.m., they can come and see him being inducted in the Science Fiction Hall of Fame, because it's high time, and he certainly deserves it, as do all these other wonderful writers who worked on Twilight.
Absolutely, and who will he share there, the platform with? Who's been in that Hall of Fame?
Oh, well, certainly Ray Bradbury and Heinlein and Asimov, you know, all the greats, and you know, a lot of these, and Rod was a huge fan of science fiction. He read Heinlein, he read Arthur C. Clarke, he read Bradbury. He knew the genre. He came to it with great respect. And in fact, he won 3 Hugo Awards, which is the top award in science fiction. And that's, of course, the award that I'm nominated for now, thanks to Rod's inspiration.
This is an intense job. And did you find, even as a small girl, was he able to spend some time with the family, or was he always working?
No, absolutely. He spent time with the family. I have fabulous memories of time with my dad. He was very available, a lot of fun, very childlike. He was hysterical. Even in my teens, I thought he was the funniest person I've ever met. In fact, my mother used to say to me, "Stop laughing at him. You're only encouraging him." He was very available. I mean, he worked hard, but he worked in, you know, his office in the backyard, so... you know, we didn't bother him a lot, but certainly we knew we could go out there if we needed to.
We lost him early, about, what, 50 years old?
Yeah, he was just 50. In fact, on June 28th, it will be 33 years since he died.
Okay, he had, what, a couple heart attacks, and then he was going to get triple bypass, and then he had a heart attack. The third one, I think, while he was on the operating table.
Right, he died... They performed the open heart surgery, and he had a heart attack on the table and survived 3 days following the surgery.
Jeez. Was he a heavy smoker? I mean,
yeah.
you would see him with a cigarette during the Twilight Zone, but was he heavy?
He constantly was smoking.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to our first-time caller line. We've got you, Ernie, in Corona, California. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ernie.
Hi, George. An honor and a privilege to be with you this evening. Thank you very much. I can't tell you how much of a public service it is that you're doing with this program. I absolutely love it.
Thank you.
You know, Mr. Serling was beyond his time, you know, and I have to thank you. I remember as a child growing up watching these programs, you know, and even to this day, as I was telling George, your associate, who took my call, you know, to this day, I mean, I sit with friends and we talk and we laugh and, you know, we still freak ourselves out with the programs that we've seen, you know, talking about the Twilight Zone. It's just too bad that they don't have these marathons on like they used to. You know, the one that stands out the most, and because it is a first-time call, I can't remember the name, but it's the one where we experienced the nuclear war and the gentleman is down reading the books in the library, and his glasses break.
Burgess Meredith. And what's the name of that, Mark?
That's time enough at last.
I can't tell you, you know, how true to life that hit home. I mean, with so many different things that are going on in the world, you know, it's just amazing. You know, and we can't forget him from Night Galleries either. I mean, Night Galleries was another, you know, thing that to this day, I mean, it's so coincidental that, you know, this program, you know, is talking about, you know, Mr. Serling. We were just talking about this last night, and I just happened to hear today from one of my friends that you were talking about this tonight. And, you know, just great all the way around, you know. And thank you very much this evening for taking my call. I appreciate it. And thank you to your father. Wonderful man. Beyond his time. Just thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. We've got Al in Evansville, Indiana. You're on the line. Hey, Al.
Hey, guys. It's great to be on the show tonight. And I'd like to thank Ann for just her father's work and how it's just amazing. And I watch Twilight Zone all the time. And I got a question for Mr. Zikri. I'm a huge fan of the book, too, and the companion. And I was wondering what drove you to compile it and write it.
Well, thanks for asking the question, Al. I knew when I got out of college that I wanted to be a writer, producer working in TV, and I thought, well, how do you learn how to make high-quality television? Well, you study how the best television was made, and I started to try to read about Twilight Zone and found that almost nothing had been written about it. And so I realized that in order to learn what I wanted to learn, I was going to have to write the book that I wanted to read, and that began my journey. And it was so phenomenal because to be able to just go through Rod's files and read his scripts and take home his personal 16-millimeter prints of those episodes and interview over 100 people who worked on the show, it was really my education in television. And the thing that's been very gratifying is that the book has sold 500,000 copies, and many of the people who've read it have then been inspired to go on to become writer-producers in TV to emulate Rod, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. And so I think that book and Rod's work created, as I said, a whole generation of people making television now. And the thing about Rod that's so phenomenal and so unique is that he just came from his heart. He had this brilliant imagination, but he also had this enormous heart, just like Ann was talking about. He had such great humanity beyond just his ideas as well.
Mark, you've written before. It's not easy. How could Rod be so prolific and come up with these new, innovative scripts time and time again?
Well, I think, first of all, it's just genius. I mean, he was one of a kind, but also he had enormous enthusiasm. And I was fortunate enough to come across videotapes of him teaching classes and writing. And you just see that enthusiasm, that love of the world and that love of writing and that love of people and just all of that comes across. So he was, you know, it's tragic that he died at 50, but my God, he packed a huge amount into those 50 years.
And what'd you think of Night Gallery? I mean, he was associated with it, but not like when he was doing Twilight Zone, right?
Right. He did not have creative control over Night Gallery. And I think initially, you know, he was very hopeful about this show. There were some that he liked very much. Tim Riley's Bar, I believe, was certainly a favorite. But I think in the end, you know, he stuck with it because he was contractually obligated, but that was it. I think he was glad to get out.
He really didn't like being the talent either, did he? The host.
Well, I think what, you know, again, what happened with Night Gallery was, he didn't have the kind of creative control that he'd had with Twilight Zone.
Right.
I think that's probably why, you know, he didn't like what it became.
Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Cameron, it's your turn. Hey, Cameron.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'll say that I'm 50 years old. The Twilight Zone and Night Gallery is the greatest compilation of science fiction and metaphysical horror ever. I treasure all those episodes, watched them since I was a kid. I still think of Inger Stevens driving across the country as a ghost, or the episode with Bunny Blake, the actress, and the one room for one more, honey. The plane accident. You know, he delved into metaphysical horror, dealing with death, and also, you know, Death Ship. You know, that one of with Jack Klugman. I mean, just brilliant episodes. Need for special effects like they have today or blood and gore. He went to the depths of our fear. fears. And I don't think anybody, not even Hitchcock, touched on so many subjects and so many aspects of what really frightens us. And I just, it's just a real loss, not only to literature, but to theater, television, and cinema, you know, just a great loss.
He was born on Christmas Day. So what a gift we got with him. He would have been 84 years old, I believe, right, this year?
83.
I bet he still would have kept writing, don't you, Ann?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think with the computer, he would have been even more prolific, if that was possible.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling, Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night. And I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light. Also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. I need to know. Now I can see the light.